the group that David and I were talking about, they get paid by the city to provide, 29 spaces for homeless people of the 500 to 1,500 homeless people, while the city criminalizes the other 98% with its anti-homeless sleeping ban, and the Citizens Committee for the Homeless sits around and shuffles papers. Becky, welcome to the studio.
That's actually 28 spaces in our summer program, and I know it's a little cold outside to be starting a summer program, but we go from a winter program to a summer program, and there are mighty few places for homeless people to sleep in the ISSP program for most of the year, unfortunately.
Well, you've just come from the monthly meeting of the Citizens Committee to exploit for the homeless. What's going on there? I hear we have Dr. Alan Bear telling anti-homeless jokes, as he's done in the past. That's the chair of the board of the Citizens Committee to exploit for the homeless.
He held back from the humor, thankfully.
Yeah. I don't want to be accused of personal attacks on distinguished personages who are working so hard to help the homeless. Or anyway, why don't you join us here? I mean, do you have a report on what's happened? Did anything happen at this meeting, or was it just? It sounded pretty boring and technical from what David Silva said, because we just spoke to him on the phone, and he apparently was at this meeting. This is a monthly board meeting. Do you expect to be on the board much longer? I see they're circulating a petition that's intended to dump you.
Now this is something that's being proposed: is limiting the CCH board member to 9 members and the HCRC board to 9 members to make this super board of 18 members.
Super board already. Go ahead.
And of course, that would involve cuts from both sides, from both boards, to bring our membership down to 9. So who's going to go? We looked at the list. There are 15 members of CCH currently. 3 of those are planning on leaving. So, but that still leaves a few people who don't want to go that might be shown the door.
I've always urged you to resign from this board, as you know, because I think that they waste your time and waste the community's time. But there are many in the homeless community who feel you are an advocate for them and who want to see you continue your position on the board because you raise issues which, even though they never win, nonetheless, at least they get raised and discussed on the board.
I won one.
Hey, let's hear it. This could be a breaking story.
Apparently, HCRC has decided that they can go along with open meetings for the new super board. And that was something I proposed, was picked up by several members of CCH, and it is in the proposal at this point in time.
I had heard that about a month ago, so it's not news to me, but it certainly is a good thing. Although, it is a good thing. I have been repeatedly denied entrance to the board meetings of Homeless Community Resource Center boards. Every time I've requested, they refuse to give other people the time and place of those meetings. Karen Gillette has carefully made sure those meetings were a kind of a closed fiefdom of her own, and so I guess now she's going to have to open the meetings. But as we know, even though we've had open meetings with the Citizens Committee for the Homeless for a number of years, it hasn't had much impact on the CCH.
The scuttlebutt was that HCRC claimed that they had closed meetings because that was how they could deal with those disruptive elements. They decided that there are other ways that they can use and that they're willing to open the meetings.
I believe their butts were scuttling, no question about it, because as far as I know, none of their meetings has ever been disrupted by anybody. They probably should have had, all their meetings should have been disrupted considering, why get too extreme about this? Certainly, people should have spoken up at their meetings, but Karen Gillette is notorious for spreading false information about activists, whether it be that they're trying to close her food program when they're circulating a petition for better food, or they're trying to close her center. It's really a sad thing when it happens, and I don't like false information, and I think it has to be said that no one has ever disrupted a meeting of the Homeless Community Resource Center. In fact, nobody has ever, I think, I've ever attended a meeting of the board of the Homeless Community. Very few people get the option to do that. I think I was at one or two of them. They carefully let you have 5 or 10 minutes, and then they usher you in and they usher you out. Now, it is true that your Citizens Committee for the Homeless Board, which had a promise and a contract with the hundreds of campers in the fall of 1995 at the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, and then broke its word and kicked all those people out, and some of these people then later died, caused a lot of anger, and people came to the meeting and tried to speak up about it, and when they were suppressed, they spoke up anyway. I was one of those, and I was subsequently barred from the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, I think, for 2 or 3 months. Mainly for speaking the truth, which is, you know, probably a good reason to get barred as any. But I don't think anybody's ever disrupted the Homeless Community Resource Center meetings. As I said, they don't get to those meetings. Anything else happened at the meeting we should know about before we bury this sucker in the deep, dark grave where it belongs?
I don't know. There are some things in the works that I am actually not at liberty to discuss.
Well, we don't want to break the confidence of this little cabal that you belong to. But if you have any questions...
Yes, we have the blood oath, the secret sign, and...
Finger up the ass and head up your nose, whatever. If you have any questions of Becky Johnson, or if you want to get involved with the Lighthouse Alternative Press, we still have... It looks like he's falling asleep here in the studio. It's Bill Beebe, who's getting together a paper which you can actually... get your opinions out to the community and not just sit there fuming or get to read the Sentinel and have a heart attack as you read about the latest police abuse transformed into the great community benefit of these police officers emptying their pistols into whoever they're emptying them into at the moment. The latest thing about this, the California Highway Patrol dispatching a guy who they thought had a gun. I like that one. You know, it's part of a long line of... Police misconduct. It's hard, I'm a little glib about it. I don't know all the details of this case, and I don't want to say, really, because I can't really comment on that. You have something to say about that, Bill?
I saw the picture last night. I heard it was one bullet. They had a bunch of rubber bullets, and they had one bullet. And then there's about 3 gallons of blood going down to the summit of 17th. It was unbelievable. And so I would really like to hear from anybody. You can give me a call if they have any eyewitnesses or know anybody who has an eyewitness to the scene. Please give me a call because I would love to check into this. And you can give me a call at 457-0431 because I know that wasn't from one bullet. And I can't imagine anybody who's, if you're suicidal, why would you want to do the chase and then try to pull out a gun? I mean, it seems like there's a lot easier ways to commit suicide. So... please give me a call at 457-0431 if you have any information on that.
I appreciate you looking into that, Bill. You know, you're dealing with two individuals here who are members of Santa Cruzans for Full Disclosure, which is a group that really did a lot of investigation of the Happy John Dines slaying, which you probably know about, the hippie fellow who was shot by police at the corner of Front and Soquel Street, and then, of course, the Brian Andrus slaying. And while we're on the Brian Andrus slaying, let me point out
shooting. He's alive.
True, he's not alive. I mean, he is. He's not dead. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, that's true. He's actually improving. He's hobbling around.
Because now we'll get to see this in court. We'll see witnesses called. We'll see evidence presented. And unlike the Happy John case, we'll get to see if the story that the police have put out holds water once it hits the court.
Or is it all wet? That's the question. And I think tomorrow we're going to have a court hearing. Now, I'm a little bit confused and concerned because I'm not quite sure... what time tomorrow the Brian Andrus case resumes in court. Do you know, Becky? I think it is April 24th.
I heard 10 o'clock.
10 o'clock, and I think it's Department 5?
Yeah, Department 5.
It's 5. I think it was either 5 or 6. And you'll be able to see the ongoing antics of the district attorney and the police department as they haul this guy in. And for those who kind of come in late to this case... Brian Andrus was the guy who was shot over on Button Street in mid-March. Apparently he drove in a rage, angry because of a problem he'd had, locked his keys in his car, came back, broke a window to get into his car, was growling and rowling and raging and concerned a few neighbors who called, not 911, but who called the business number. One of those neighbors later really regretted that she ever did such a call. That was Cherie Peterson. And she's spoken on the air repeatedly about this case and spoken to the police review board. And I guess she'll be soon filing a complaint, as will her husband. She was an eyewitness to the shooting of Brian Andrus. What happened was 4 cops came to the door, allegedly, concerned about potential domestic violence, certainly a legitimate concern. They However, when Lori Andrus, Brian's wife, first appeared at the window and then at the door saying she was fine, they didn't, for example, ask her to step out of the house to make sure. They didn't inquire further, ask for her husband to come out because of the, you know, maybe concern about her safety. Instead, they shoved their way into the house and when grabbed her hands, put her hands above her head, according to her testimony, and the original Sentinel story by Karen Clark. And then her husband, Brian Andrus, seeing this, came down the stairway, the Sentinel story and the officers claim, with a baseball bat. And the wife, Lori Andrus, claims that he had no room to strike her in the house, I mean to strike the officer, Officer Gerasio, the man who grabbed the diminutive wife of Brian Andrus. And he was taken, he claimed he was, Gerasio claims he was hit on the fingers. One other officer at least claimed he was hit on the chest. I think his name is Zominic. And two officers, the latest story, claimed they were menaced by a bat. And the man fired 8 to 10 shots at him, four of which hit him, and maybe five, it's not clear. And he went down big time. And there was a real controversy as to whether he got any medical treatment at all in the next few minutes, and whether he was stripped naked by the police or by the ambulance medical crew that came. Certainly, Lori Andrus retreated into the house, locked the door. The police forced their way in again using the keys from the landlady and pressured Lori Andrus into coming to the police station with her child, where they held her for 3 to 5 hours, questioning her without an attorney, at least by her claims. Took Andrus to a hospital where they denied him access to his family, didn't even tell his mother about the shooting until the next day, where she learned about it from the papers. All of this we have in testimony that you heard, you regular listeners who've listened to Free Radio Santa Cruz and the Bathrobe Spears Broadside Show, which is the show you're listening to right now. And if you want to follow this case further, Department 5, tomorrow at 10 o'clock at 701 Ocean Street, the county courthouse, is the place to show up. Also happening tomorrow at 10 o'clock is a long postponed trial for Brian Clark. Brian Clark is a youth at the Aptos Shopping Center, Rancho Del Mar, in Aptos, who essentially spoke out against the misconduct by a deputy, James Thurber, who has a notorious history of abusive behavior towards citizens, both in the courtroom and on the streets as a bailiff and county deputy. And this Thurber was harassing his girlfriend, Brian Clark's girlfriend, because she had a cigarette. He demanded to know this, and was she underage, and did a warrant check on her, and was checking other people for cigarettes. Apparently, as part of a campaign to harass Jerry Henry. I'm always getting your name wrong. Jerry Henry is sort of a street minister at the Aptos Shopping Center. And Jerry Henry is a person that the sheriff's deputies there and some of the merchants have decided they are going to make an example of and eliminate from the scene. And they're pursuing him in court through different avenues because, essentially, he's been continuing to advise young people that they have rights, that if the sheriffs and the merchants want to get rid of people with skateboards and young people who are, heavens forfend, smoking in those areas, that the young people still have the right to be in public spaces, just as I feel homeless people have the right to be in public spaces. And anyway, Clark has been charged with interfering with an officer. What was the officer doing that he interfered with? Well, his entire family has so far appeared twice on trial dates that have been twice postponed. I'm not quite sure why. And this again will be happening in Judge McAdams' court. I call him Many Faces McAdams. He's one of our local judiciary, used very loosely. He's the only public defender, former public defender. All the rest of these judges are from the DA's office, but ironically, he's still one of the worst judges. If you cough in his courtroom, if you whisper to a friend, he's likely to start, you know, threatening contempt proceedings. I remember he excluded me once from a courtroom. I filed a writ of mandamus down the hall because I'd said a word quietly to someone to my side in the trial of Suzanne Espinoza back in 1992. But, hey, let's not get historical. Check out Brian Clark's trial tomorrow at 10 o'clock. Again, it may not go. That's Department 7. And check out Brian Andrus's hearing. That's the man who the police could not kill. They tried, I'll tell you. They shot this guy full of lead, and they treated him abominably at the hospital, and they tried to hold him on $100,000 bail, but he got out. And he hasn't run away, and he hasn't fled the area. He's continuing to fight, and his neighbors are still very upset about what's gone on, about all the bullets flying, with many children in the area, with his two-year-old son, Laurie Andrus' two-year-old son there, as this was happening in the shooting on Button Street. And so you can check this out yourself tomorrow at 10 o'clock at Department 5 in the Superior Court. So what I'd like to do is maintain a little continuity here. It looks like, however, I'm being interrupted by one of my associates, another broadcaster. What's up, broadcaster?
Well, I didn't even know you guys were broadcasting, but yesterday I was doing my show and 007 came in, and he said that he was the third car in line at the 17 shootout. And I asked him, you know, a range of questions, but he claimed that this guy was acting very erratically, was doing the full dance with what appeared to be a gun, though he couldn't see really well. He was able to slip by, like he was like the third car in line when the incident happened. So apparently, from what he says, everything is pretty kosher.
Well, by acting erratically, do you mean that he appeared to pull a weapon on a police officer, or he just started doing a hula dance? What was going on?
007 had mentioned that it wasn't quite. He couldn't see right really clear, but he said his hand was like kind of behind his jacket, stuff like that, and. Actually, he had talked to with when once we get inside. He said something last night on the air about it. So maybe when he comes back in, we can contact 007 and see, you know, more clearly. But he said everything that he saw was pretty much routine.
We're talking to
Audio Cranium.
Audio Cranium, another of the infamous Free Radio Santa Cruz Collective. You're leaning forward as if to say something, Becky.
Well, really. All I know about this case is what I have read in the Sentinel and the Mercury News articles and some of this coverage I saw on the television.
Like Mike Rotkin, all you know is what you read in the Sentinel.
Right. But according to those articles, they did talk about a witness who talked to about this man that he sort of danced around. That was after he'd been shot with rubber bullets by the Campbell police, according to that witness report. And I suppose if I'd been hit by rubber bullets, I might not be walking around normally either.
Right. I don't have much to say about this case because I haven't studied it. I want to point out that Bill Beebe of the Lighthouse Alternative Press has expressed a specific interest in folks interested in investigating this case or bringing reports to him. His phone number, for those who want to call in around this issue, is 457-0431, 457-0431. And perhaps we'll have some more information about that. I'm really still kind of, you know, it's kind of hard to keep up with all these shootings. Becky?
We don't even know who the officer was that shot this man up on 17, the CHP officer. The investigators decided that that's just to be remain a departmental secret until their investigations concluded.
That's one of those sacred mysteries, the mysteries of the gun and the badge. We don't want to break from that mystique now, do we? Let's see. What else have I got here? We've got the Brian Clark case coming up at 10 o'clock in Department 7. We've got the Brian Andrus case coming up at 10 o'clock in Department 5. We've had one of our activist vans towed away again recently. Rolling Thunder's van got towed away by police from the Homeless Community Resource Center. And on May 1st, the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program is ending, leaving one church per night, I believe, as the sole remaining refuge for homeless people, 500 to 1,500 of them within the city limits. And that what? How many spaces will that be, Becky? You're on the board.
In northern Santa Cruz County, that'll be 28 spaces per night.
Suppose if you can fit 500 people in 28 spaces, that's going to be another Rotkin miracle. I think we should all stay tuned for that one. I'm going to pause now briefly.
Some of that $9.1 million at use.
That's the amount of money that Councilmember Rotkin claims the city spends on the homeless.
I looked over the CCH budget today for the annual budget, and it's under $1 million for all of the programs CCH runs. I imagine HCRC has a budget very similar. That's $2 million. I don't know where this other $7.1 million is.
Well, I think any programs that are conceivably accessible to homeless people are written into this kind of padded budget estimate that the city council uses to justify its sort of fluff up its image with the public when the issue comes up. How can you be arresting people for sleeping when there's no legal places for them to sleep? I mean, does that make any sense? Doesn't make any sense to this to the average person, but city council members and police officers have understandings that we lack. However, let us turn to a more distant voice. It's not just males that get shot by the police and killed by the police. In Berkeley in 1992, a woman named Rosebud was shot down, and here's a song about that. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz. That was Carol Denny's song from North County Jail, one of her early 90s albums. The song Rosebud, about the People's Park activist who was slain by police when she invaded the sacred domain of Chancellor Tien back in 1992 after Tien's police had injured many individuals and shown complete disrespect for the community by ripping up the park in violation of the resolutions of many commissions and obviously the will of the folks there. But that's a whole different story. Carol Denny will probably be one of the people doing a benefit for the committee to repeal the sleeping ban on May 8th. And we're going to be talking more about that as we move forward on our show. Right now, I want to repeat again because our man here is about to split after having patiently sat for the last hour and a half. We're talking about Bill Beebe of the Lighthouse Alternative Press, man who's going to start a new paper So you, for those of you people who just can't listen to me at this time, you can read his paper. And who knows, I may even write for his paper. You can write for his paper. You can give him a call at 457-0431. He's having a get-together this weekend with folks who are interested. If you're interested in doing some writing for a real weekly paper that can be an alternative to the Good Times, the Metro, the Santa Cruz Urinal, or the Sentinel, as some unenlightened individuals call it, Bill Beebe at 457-0431 is the one to call. Bill, anything else you want to say about that?
Yeah, only that we're doing exactly what you're doing here on the radio, and we really support what you're doing, and we just need a bunch of activists. The one thing I thought I'd like to leave you with is the idea that we're all working for a better planet and social justice, and we're going to try to put a paper together that covers a wide variety of issues that ties them in together so it shows that we're all working for the same thing. There's going to be priorities coming up where one week, one issue is going to be more important, congressional hearings this week, but basically if we can internet and work together, we can work for common issues together, and we can get out in a hard copy form to people. They can see these issues every single week, and I hope that people will give us a call. And we're putting out our first paper in 6 weeks, so if you have any articles, or if you want to be an editor, or a writer, a photographer, if you do comics, if you just want to answer phones, or just you can come to the parties and we're going to throw every single week and just play some music and hang out and give us some ideas. That would also be great. Or if you have ideas, please give us a call. And we're called the Lighthouse Alternative Press. And you can call Daniel Yarian at 426-1865 or Bill Beebe, which is me, at 457-0431. And hang in there and we'll all work together for a better planet.
I'm glad you're starting a paper, Bill, and who knows, maybe we'll have your partner on Sunday to continue this conversation. Come on, all you louts out there. You want to do some writing, you get a chance to talk to a real editor who actually will publish your stuff, unlike the Sentinel, which will cut you off after 200 words right at the navel, and the City on a Hill Press, which can't figure out whether to write you or go blind. I mean, print you or go blind. Anyway, the number for the Lighthouse Alternative Press is available. Just give me a call and call me between shows for anything you want put on this show. We are concerned with civil rights for poor people, civil rights in the community here in Santa Cruz. My number is 423-4833, 423-HUFF. And the number of the studio call-in line, should you want to join this discussion, is 423-5361, 423-5361. We're still waiting for that exciting call-in from our man up north, he's in Marin County, I think, at this point, Keith McHenry. I think probably he's gotten waylaid. I'm not sure, maybe laid, and then he's way, way up there. Anyway, he's not calling in at the moment. So let's play for you an interview with gubernatorial candidate Dennis Perrone, recorded right before the show. It doesn't tell you anything terribly new or exciting, but I kind of like the things Dennis says. Next time I interview him, however, I'll have some harsher questions. I like to do that because we all know Dennis is a good guy. We like him, but well, here's what he got to say. Let's listen to it.
Okay, we're on the line with Dennis Perrone, gubernatorial candidate for the Republican Party. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, Robert. How you doing?
Good. What's happening up in San Francisco for you in terms of your most recent campaign concerns?
Well, you know, we did get busted the other day by Sheriff Hennessy, who closed the Cannabis Cultivators Club. I stepped down as its founder, as the director. A new club opened in his position, in his place. It's called the Cannabis Healing Center. It's got a new director, Hazel Rogers. And essentially everything is the same, except now we have more guidance from the court. That is, we can't sell caregivers, and we can only be reimbursed for the marijuana we cultivate. But aside from that, a lot of clouds are lifted over our head. The Cannabis Club is totally legal now.
Sounds good to me. Have any other clubs come forward to support you? I know that sometimes there's been some friction between the San Francisco club and other clubs.
Well, you know, I'm not sure about too much friction. I think everyone has their own way of doing things, and I support everyone's way of doing it. At the same time, we're all enjoined on a federal suit that's going to be heard pretty soon. Mm-hmm. The feds are trying to put a court injunction against us, too, a civil injunction to close us down. And so we're all in this together, and I think everyone kind of realizes that, and fighting for me is like fighting for yourself. At the same time, it has been, by not having to be the director here, it has freed me to do other things, like be your governor and run for governor. And 100.6, 1.2. And you know, spread my message of hope and compassion throughout the state of California.
What will the first 100 days of Governor Perone be like when you get into office?
Well, of course, my first official act will be to pardon myself. And then the second official act is to pardon every nonviolent marijuana offender in jail, in prisons. And then, on a case-by-case basis, other nonviolent drug-related activity. And then I'm going to start a program that expands the methadone maintenance centers and expands it to include the drug of choice. I'm going to prescriptive access to all hard drugs to stop this crime wave. And then we're going to work to reduce the prison population and use that money to start building houses for people that are homeless and start feeding people. And I'd like to start a breakfast program in the schools. And I've got a big plans for the state of California, and I think the first 100 days will be a lot of resistance from the old guard. At the same time, people want change, and I will give them that.
Now, in San Francisco, Mayor Brown, supposedly a liberal man, has gone after homeless people in Golden Gate Park, folks living in their vehicles, and people simply trying to sleep at night. How will you address the problem of homeless people who have no place to sleep and don't have any housing at the moment, but are subject to local ordinances making sleeping a crime and simply being in public spaces criminal behavior?
Well, I'm totally against that, and whatever power I have, either persuasion or police power, I will stop. I will use to stop the harassment of homeless people whose no fault of theirs that they can't find a home. At the same time, I'm going to institute a program so that every Californian will have a home, will have a place to live, will have a roof over their head. And then I'm going to try to build these people up, make them members of our society. I also intend to expand the mental health services for those people that are troubled, who are on the streets. I have a plan to humanize government and to take the threats from government and make them into love and compassion.
Mm-hmm. Where are you going to get the revenue to do this kind of stuff?
Well, you know, I was thinking the rich people are not really paying their fair share, and I think the corporations haven't been paying their fair share. And I want to take the tax burden off the little people and put it where it really belongs, the people that are making so much out of a society and so much out of this state and the country, and not putting their fair share back into it. And I'm going to ask them to start paying their fair share through legislative action.
Now, I read recently in the Examiner that the response of attacks on sex workers or prostitutes in downtown San Francisco has been to lock up the prostitutes and crack down on those who are patronizing them. What's your reaction to this?
Well, I think we've got to legalize prostitution, and prohibition does not work. That's the bottom line. As much as we may not like some things, prohibition does not work. I do not approve of gambling. I think gambling is a very bad idea. But the prohibition against gambling, prohibition against gambling is wrong, and we've got to stop prohibition.
A lot of hot topics around issues of immigration, and teaching in the Spanish language in our education system. What's your reaction to those concerns?
Well, I'm against that initiative, if that's what you're asking, and I support bilingual education. Having ignorant Mexican-American people in our country is not going to bode well for anybody. Mm-hmm. And they're going to wind up in prison or at the bottom of the ladder, and I don't think that's good for anybody as a society. I think we've got to stop demonizing people and stop marginalizing people and start helping people and bring them up. If not, we are always going to have an underclass that we're always going to demonize and we're always going to have to build prisons for. I want to bring people up, not put them down. I think that's the job of government.
What about unions? So unions have been dropping in membership in the last 2 decades. Would you consider yourself pro-union, anti-union, neutral on the issue? What do you think about that stuff?
No, pro-union. I wish they were a little stronger. I wish they really spoke for the members. Sometimes they don't feel like they do. At the same time, the workers really don't have a lot, with downsizing and global economy and all that. Unions are the last bastion of strength that the working man has. At the same time, I think they have to adjust to the future and start being realistic about the way things could be and where these things are. and maybe start thinking more towards collective ownership of things as opposed to just like the workers versus the bosses.
One of the union concerns, as well as the concerns of many in the community, is the flight of foreign jobs and capital to areas where you have very low income labor, very low paid labor, or just slave labor. What's your response to that? I know it's a federal problem, but it certainly affects Californians.
Well, you know, I think that we can boycott with our dollars. Ted, I think that if there is a country and it is pointed out to us that these products are being made with slave labor, children's labor, that we should use our power of the boycott and the economic power. And that seems to always draw their more attention than a resolution here and a resolution there. I think a concerted effort on the power of the consumers could affect the politics in less remote countries and so on.
Are there issues that I haven't covered that you would like to make some statements on that you think are going to be important in the upcoming election?
Well, I think it's important that we end the death penalty. I think it's important that we open the border to Mexico. I think it's important that we stop building prisons and start building houses. And I think those are the reasons to vote for me.
If people want to help you, what can they do and how can they reach you?
Well, essentially it's a grassroots campaign. Talk about, word of mouth, letters to the editor. If you want to get a button or something, call 621-3986.
And area code 415.
Yeah, we'll mail you one.
Sounds good to me, Dennis.
Thank you, brother.
And that was Dennis Perrone, gubernatorial Republican candidate. Probably better than any of the other candidates running at this time, or certainly better than many of them. Also fighting a hands-on battle to ensure that folks who need to use medical marijuana continue to have it as he passes his club on to an older woman, an 87-year-old woman, who will make the feds and the state authorities look like real assholes if they move in and attempt to arrest her for providing vital medicine to folks who are dying and in pain and who need that kind of medication. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Bathrop Spear Robert. This is Bathrop Spear's Broadsides. We're going to be with you for another 18 minutes at least, and we're going to be covering, I guess our next topic we're going to be turning to as soon as we hear from our man about to call in, if he isn't getting drunk or on the can somewhere. That's David Silva, Dead Center David, who has been running from one meeting to the next, or hobbling from one meeting to the next after having been thrown out the door by Andy Crane, Sergeant Andy Crane, into a concrete pillar 2 years ago and essentially disabled severely through that, and is now suing the city around that issue. But at the same time, he's running the campaign, one of the people running the campaign, to end the sleeping ban, to make sleeping a legal activity, believe it or not, for homeless people in Santa Cruz. I've also got a kind of a report, which I'm about to go into. I don't, it appears, have time to kind of finish up what I was hoping to do from last week. You may remember we did a lot of work last week on the Citizens Police Review Board. Or is it the, I've got to think of a proper way to describe this board. This is a board which doesn't use the powers it has and uses what powers it does have to essentially justify and rubber stamp police behavior, most specifically the misconduct of the police in the Happy John Dine slaying last November, as well as almost every complaint that a homeless person has ever filed before this board have all been deep-sixed and dumped, as they have been by the police department before them, because the board actually just rubber stamps what the police department does in most cases, never holds public hearings, never has an independent investigation, never has an early investigation. And we talked about that one last week. We were concerned about what that was all about. And they have once a month, the police review board has a sort of a public meeting, not a public hearing. All the hearings that they have on complaints are held behind closed doors. And they don't discuss the reasons that they come up with, the decisions they come up with. You don't get to know the disciplinary consequences to the police officers. The whole thing is quite a scandal. I'd hope to discuss that further and actually play you some rather exciting tape
where I'm threatened with arrest, and I'm actually, I've written a letter to the board about it. But we have an incoming phone call, which may even be more exciting.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, this is Dave. Did I miss something? I've been having so many calls from different
coordinators
and committees
on
the sleeping band that, you know, we had to decide things, you know, for our big concert and everything coming up.
Anything you want to say about that first before we launch into some other stuff?
Well, May 8th, we're having a real nice concert benefit rally dance at the Veterans Hall. It's May 8th. That's a Friday, 7 p.m. We have some nice, mellow, really big, nice name group start out, and a little bit of a comedy and a little bit of folk. And we're going to have some pushes and some drives for money.
Is the rumor true that you're actually going to have Carol Denny, that famous folk singer who just sang Rosebud, at this show?
The rumor is more than true. You know, Carol Denny is our, you know, like, you know, star, celeb, guaranteed stamp embossed. But, you know, we have a lot of other stars that are going to be coming, too, that it's going to be quite a draw to a lot of different people, lots of different kinds of people. But, you know, we'll start out the evening real mellow, and we're going to probably have a real lively dance. And it's a big name surprise lively dance for you younger sets that still can dance.
Well, you know, I actually heard today that Dennis Perrone is considering coming to this event as well.
Oh, really? I've just been wanting that event. I'm going to try to get the Green Party Lieutenant Governor, Sarah Amir, to come to speak with him.
Well,
maybe
case,
she can read
regardless
the
of regardless yep. of the suits and the fancy faces that show up.
Yeah.
It's really going to be people's actions in the streets in the next month that makes a difference as to whether this initiative to repeal the sleeping
and
blanket.
The timing on that, Robert. You know, the timing
the
on
ballot.
Those actions. The timing on those actions are so sensitive. In terms of, like, you know, the public has to go through sort of a knee-jerk reaction phase before they start getting it. And if they're right in the middle of that knee-jerk reaction phase just when we're trying to get our signatures finished, it could be, like, the wrong timing. So I think we really ought to coordinate, you know, this effort. No, let's try first, you know, to see how many people show up for this benefit, see if we have to do if the homeless have to do sleep-ins to get out of the rain.
If
the homeless do sleep-ins themselves naturally,
right.
I think they should be protected,
you know, if folks
protected
want,
by politicians in this town.
I was about to play a song and will as soon as our interview is over about that whole issue. But I think that, people need to give a call to you, David, at 429-5284.
Thanks a lot.
And to, I guess, one of our other main sleeping band coordinators.
My phone is a temporary Green Party message phone right now, too, so it's kind of crowded, so people know that it takes me a while to get back to it.
Okay, but remember, if you want to get tickets, if you want to get petitions, give a call to David. If you want to get tickets to this benefit, you can also, I guess, give them a call at 429-5284. 429-5284.
Yeah, the title of this event is No One Gets Out of Here Without a Petition.
That's the Committee to Repeal the Sleeping
No
Ban.
No One Gets Out of Here Without a Petition.
Right. Now, let's turn now to to what you've been up to in terms of your jogging from one meeting to the next.
I'm exhausted, you know?
Yeah, I believe it. Now, you went to the Beach Flats, and you've been following that situation. For those who are ignorant of what's going on, what's happening with the Beach Flats?
A lot of bulldozers and some development and expansion of the boardwalk to some super riots. They're going to put some real high things next to people's ears.
Now,
rental area.
Hang on.
Town,
let's cut through the rhetoric here.
Rhetoric.
As I understand it, what's going on is the city council, let me give you the devil's advocate point of view, is trying to renovate and upgrade the Beach Flats, which is in deplorable shape, and they're trying to help do this out with the 3rd Street realignment by making it a more livable area by providing alternate housing, by tearing down unsightly, unhealthy housing.
Tear down just the homes of the victims.
Wait a minute. Just a minute, David. Now, this is what the city council is telling us. Can that be wrong?
City council is not telling us that, for one thing.
No, that's true. But the majority... The five votes in the city council, Mary Beth Campbell, Scott Kennedy, Cynthia Matthews, Mike Rotkin, Michael Hernandez, all these are great progressives.
Scott Kennedy and Cynthia Matthews were wincing at some of the findings of the environmental impact report.
They could not believe how bad
this project was.
Okay, now tell us about this project. What was this hearing you went to, and what did you learn?
Well, I went to a couple hearings, actually. I went to the planning and zoning joint public hearing on it. And there was had Spanish translation. It was really well attended. It was room 3 at Loudoun Nelson Center. And There's a lot of people made a lot of speeches, some on again, off again candidates, you know, talking about how this would be great for union jobs, which I'd never heard the Seaside Company expansion ever creating any union jobs in any permanent way. But somehow or other, those kind of things happen. And then after the and a lot of people expressed some real ecological concerns, real concerns about destruction of a human neighborhood as opposed to a physical neighborhood. You're destructing and displacing a human neighborhood, creating homelessness, and then 4 years later you expect to just pour new people into less places that are like facing 4-foot-tall walls of the back of the parking
Wait a minute, I'm not quite sure what you're talking about, David.
Yeah.
Are you saying that Are you saying that the plan to support the Seaside Company's essential redevelopment of the beach flats is in some way flawed?
In some way flawed?
Is it flawed?
From the onset.
Well, how can that be? How can it be that Scott Kennedy and Mike Rodkin, our progressives, are pressing a flawed plan? And in what ways could it be flawed?
Well, instead of giving people 2 months rent and kicking them out and telling them to find a place to own, they're going to give them 3 months rent, but then they have to be out of there for 4 years before the places are built. And they won't be able to afford them anyway because they're going to be upgraded. You know, so somehow or other, they thought that was some kind of good deal. Now they're realizing that, oh, people have caught on to it. I don't know. I think it's amazing that they supported it at all in the first place. They thought perhaps they could maybe amend it. Maybe they thought they're going to be great liberals and put all kinds of little conditions on it. But the conditions do not actually allow any of that neighborhood to improve themselves. They will be degraded, homeless. They will be in a different environment. They'll be either living in Watsonville or on the street.
How many people will this affect? How many people will be evicted as a consequence of this Kennedy
Rodkin
plan?
I really can't give you that number. Quite a few people. And it is a neighborhood. It is a community. It has its own community gardens. There's the renters and the homeowners get along really well. It's the absentee landlords that seem to be the problem, and also their neighbors, the Seaside Company. And then the Beach Hill people have, you know, kind of a real head in the clouds about a lot of the problems that the Beach Flat people have. And the Beach Hill people, however, are really watching out for all these environmental impacts, and they're noticing that this thing is not able to fly.
Now, why is that?
Well, you know, they could tell you that better than I could. But there really are, well, the environmental impact report talked about things like